There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Alan Pardew at 3 o'clock in the morning at the back of the bar. And then when I was about eight, Chelsea just beat in Middlesbrough, and I did a knee slide up to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who was on the losing Middlesbrough team.
I want to see how your feelings differ from when Lampard got sacked to now.
So I'm like 18, running a fan channel, when it was, well, at that point, one of the biggest on the internet, which is, I still can't believe they trust an 18-year-old. It was basically like, look, here's the keys, look up when you're done. It took it out of me. I burnt out. Mentally, there was one point where it went very dark, and obviously the people that I thought were my friends didn't support me. I was kind of just left out to dry. I'll be straight up. It did. Suicide did cross my mind a couple of times. Has done in the past. This is actually the first time I've actually spoken about it openly on a podcast, to be fair. So when I was two, my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer, and even after school sometimes getting on the train going up to London and seeing your mum just attached to a drip.
Do you think then that going through all of those things that you have been through, has that changed or gave more reason to why you started Imperial Wolf?
We are in a Saturday division in non-league. We are unbeaten, so right now realistically we are the best team in Southwest London. And yeah, you know what, it's not 100% Chelsea, it's not top of the game anymore. But do you know what? I am happy.
Welcome to Football and Feelings, the podcast that produces a cocktail of football, life lessons, some light-hearted fun, and a dash of mental health just to perfect the taste. If you're new around here, then head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating. That will help me grow the podcast every week. But for now, I'm joined by my lovely guest for this episode. He's an Italian stallion who lives for the beautiful game. He bleeds royal blue of Chelsea, and I keep telling him to get that checked, but he just won't. It's Tunbridge Wells's answer to Al Pacino. Louis, how you doing, Louis?
Tunbridge. it's all good. It works because my dad apparently looks like Robert De Niro. So then you've got like the amalgamation
of both.
I should
have said De Niro. Write that originally. I thought he's a De Niro man, but then I switched it up.
To be fair, I am more of a De Niro man, but Scent of a Woman is a fantastic film. Watched that yesterday. Yeah. Loved it. But yeah, I'm very good. Thank you for the intro. That's one of the best ones I've ever had, to be honest. But sticking Tunbridge Wells in there as well, because that's the thing, whenever people don't realise that's where I'm from.
I've done my research, boy. I saw it on your LinkedIn, in case you're wondering.
You're still on there. I should probably change that. Go to show I don't use LinkedIn that often.
Happy to have you on. After months of you just turning up at my house, knocking on the door, throwing stones at the window, finally, we got you on the pod.
Yeah, I know. You got Dan on first. I was like, why is Dan so special? You know, I was there like, what's wrong with him? You know, but yeah, no, it's mate. I'm so excited to be here because I love it. I think it's such a good show. I listen to it like religiously. It's brilliant.
Oh, that's nice of you, mate. That's nice of you. How are you doing? How are you feeling at the moment with sort of the end of lockdowns in sight, normalities resuming stage by stage?
Oh, mate, I'm loving it. I think the biggest thing for me is like we're just be able to play football again. Because obviously it's kind of been locked up in the house. I'm very fortunate because even though I live in London, me and my housemate have obviously, we've got a garden. So we can like, we could go and sit in it, obviously not in, you know, December and January and, you know, February. But, you know, recently we've been able to go into the garden, put our feet up, sort of enjoy it. But it's been nice just literally, even though we're training down local parks, just getting 15, 20 guys down to a training session with Wharf. And playing football, playing matches. It's just, my favourite thing so far. Soon it will be going to the pub, but obviously we've got to get to there first.
Yeah, life's all about balance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, work-life balance. You've got to get it right, you know. You got eat, pray, love. She has spaghetti. I just have a dart fruit. There's a difference.
On that note, actually, I want to start by talking about your Italian roots. I want to see if you're in touch with the culture of your family or that side of your family.
What a segue, by the way. Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, I think... I am. I'm more in touch with what I feel personally, my Italian side of my family, than I am the English or the Irish, because I'm actually quarter Irish. I want to learn more about my entire family, because I like my mum was from Liverpool and all that sort of stuff, and obviously she had an Irish mum, so my grandma's Irish, and then yeah, that's all of that. So I need to actually speak to my uncle about that, because that's something I really want to learn about. Mm. But yeah, I think my Italian side of my family, obviously growing up with my dad, we used to spend a lot of the time in Italy. When I was younger, we'd go like 2-3 times a year. Obviously with COVID and then with other stuff as well, as life's gone on, haven't gone as frequently as we wanted to. Like, I've not been to Italy now for 2 years, I think. Mm. 3 nearly. So I do need to go back, because it's a very important part of my process in terms of my work and stuff as well, which obviously we'll talk a bit later, because obviously there's other stuff you wanted to talk about because it kind of fits more in there. But I think, yeah, no, obviously with my dad, he was born here. He's Anglo-Italian. So both my grandparents came over from Italy in the 50s. My dad was born here at 1 Hyde Park Place, which was a hospital. I don't know what it is now. But yeah, he grew up around here, obviously around in London from King's Cross. So I do the that part of my life, like sort of the English, even though I said I'm not as much in touch with the English side of me, obviously I was in London a lot growing up, obviously for other reasons as well, which we'll touch on later. Mm. But, you know, we'd spend a lot of time here. My family all ran Italian restaurants. So, for example, my great uncle, he had a place in Bushey called the Alpine. My cousin, he then ran a place he was at the Alpine. Now he runs a pub in Watford. And then another one of my cousins actually runs, or was the manager, and he's still a partner in a place called Little Italy and Bar Italia, which is where I just love going there. It's in Frith Street in Soho. It's a brilliant place to go. It's the weirdest thing I think I've seen there was I bumped into Alan Pardew at 3 o'clock in the morning at the back of the bar. And then when I was about 8, Chelsea had just beaten Middlesbrough, and I did a knee slide up to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who was on the losing Middlesbrough team. So stuff like that where, you know, there's stuff like that.
Bloody hell.
Lots of memories and loads of people. It's mad. Like when you go to that place, like my dad was telling me, he bumped into like Rude Hullet just at the back of a bar. I'm like, what? Like, it's just some random stuff. But yeah, so sort of in terms of the Italian side of stuff, I can speak it, but if we went there, I'd have to break myself in. It takes me a couple of days just to tune my ear in, because I do get a bit nervous when I try and speak another language. But you know, I can do Italian, can do quite a bit of French, and then Spanish, just kind of like, you know, the basics like cerveza and stuff like that.
Man of many talents. Do you want to do the intro again on this podcast in Italian? How do you feel about that?
You have to pay me, mate. You're not paying me. You know what I mean? You know, Benvenuti al... Because it's an English name as well. Because it's the branding, you'd probably say it in English as well.
Yeah.
Benvenuti al football and the feelings. It's kind of what it would be.
Oh, very nice.
Very
nice.
Yeah. Or then, yeah, calcio and... I can't remember what feelings is. So, yeah, just go with the football and the feelings, which is like my granddad would say it.
Decent, mate. But, decent. When internationals come around, which side are you siding with? Going England or Italy? England, yeah?
I was born here. Like, as much as I say, I don't feel as in touch with my English roots as I do my Italian. Obviously, I appreciate where I come from. And my dad's an England fan, so it's like, you know... And I'm not, yeah, it's like, it's always been England. It's like, for example, when Italy won the World Cup in 2006, it was quite cool. You know, it was like, obviously we were watching it, and there's quite a big Italian, obviously, like I said, my dad's from King's Cross, there's quite a big Italian community in around Clerkenwell and stuff, and there's an Italian church. And I remember they literally locked off a big chunk of Clerkenwell for like when Italy won the World Cup. There was like massive street parties and stuff. So that was cool. But for me, you know, I'm English when it comes to me football. That's kind of where I like to settle, because obviously, you know, I like the pain, I like the anguish, I like the culture. You know, they haven't got through lines on a shirt for Italy. You know, it's not the same.
was it through family then that you became a Chelsea fan as well?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that through maybe through friends?
It was. So I was born on the 20th of December, and my dad remembers it because it's the day we beat Huddersfield. Nice. And within like 2 minutes, apparently I'd like already had like a Chelsea teddy bear. Like, I was like, that's it, it's done deal. So I've been a Chelsea fan my entire life. I was a bit of a late bloomer when it came to it, though. So like, I always supported Chelsea growing up. And I go and watch the games with Dad. Like, my first one was Norwich. I think it was 2005. And obviously, I enjoyed watching the football. I didn't go to many games when I was younger. I only really started properly going when I was about 13, 14. Mm-hmm. And it became like, my dad was like, do you just want to go to Chelsea on a weekend? Is it something you want to do? I was like, yeah, don't see why not. And then I just started going with Dad. And then we got tickets every week. And I just go and go and go and go. And then eventually, obviously, it just became, you know, part of my life, you know, just every week down at Chelsea without fail. I've always loved Chelsea. Like I said, even though I was a late bloomer kind of watch the games, like I'd always be watching it on the telly at home if I could, because my dad didn't like, we never had Sky growing up. So for example, all the games that were on Sky, I just had to watch the highlights on Match of the Day. Mm-hmm. Because my dad wasn't, he hates the Sky dishes. He was like, I don't want a dish on the front of my house. So I was like, but Dad, I want to watch the football. And he's like, okay, well, no, deal with it. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was always watching Match of the Day, or, you know, I try and keep up with it in other ways. I've always loved and supported the club growing up and stuff. It's keeping tabs on football and all that's always just been something I've done. But in terms of like making it basically a religion, it was like, it was a bit later than a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm. Who was the player that made you like really connect with the club? Because everyone has one or two of those players. Like for me, it was Thierry Henry, just because that was the perfect timing for me to come through. But who's yours?
It's actually the bloke who's just there. I obviously can't switch the camera, but Gianfranco Zola. So even though, like I said, I didn't watch as much as growing up, my dad was obsessed with Zola. So for example, we'd literally be playing, even this, it'd be stuff like, you know, we'd just talk about Zola, every single shirt I had until I was about, how old? I think it was about 8 or 9, maybe. I had 25 on the back every single time without fail. And it was just like, just Zola was just the player which, you know, I grew up loving and I loved watching, even though I got to see him live once. I never got to see him as much as I'd like, but, you know, you watch Zola and I just, he was majestic. I just loved it. And I think also that's where it's like the Italian connection as well, because my dad, obviously, you know, he's been going to Chelsea since 1968, I think. And he was saying, you know, his favourite era, obviously other than when we're constantly winning stuff now, which is great, was the 90s, when you had the likes of, you know, Gianluca Vialli, Roberto Di Matteo, Zola, like all just coming to Chelsea. And obviously that was kind of a big era. So obviously growing up, it was always Gianfranco Zola, you know, first signing when you're playing FIFA, Gianfranco Zola. It's just always was him. But I think obviously, you know, actually going to watch, you know, John Terry, Frank Lampard, like I've been very fortunate to grow up when Chelsea had just been absolutely amazing. Zola is the man, which like just I love him. He's amazing. And he's such a nice bloke as well.
Don't blame you. Yeah, he was one of those players that they just made football look a bit like art, really. Like it looked so easy. But going to like to more recent times as a Chelsea fan, it feels like it's been a strange year or two. I want to see how your feelings differ from when Lampard got sacked to now, because so many fans were gutted, understandably. It just seemed like it was maybe a bit too early to change what seems like a new direction, a long-term direction for the club, which, again, was something quite new to Chelsea's sort of culture with managers and stuff like that. But how are you feeling, more optimistic now, or are you still a little bit gutted?
I mean, it's as philosophical as it sounds. It's been and done. The door is closed. Frank Lampard's tenure is over. You know, you've got to look forward. Mm. And, you know, we've got Thomas Tuchel in charge now. Hindsight is a beautiful thing. I think as much as Chelsea were saying, it's you know, we're looking at a project and we've got one manager, all this sort of stuff. It was clear that Frank Lampard was simply a scapegoat because nobody wanted to take the job. He was the only person who turned around and went, yeah, I'll do it. Like, you know, he had obviously a short-term contract, really. At the time, obviously, Thomas Tuchel was on an 18th-month one, but at the time, Lampard got a very short-term deal. And they're saying, you know, it's a project, you know, we've got a vision, it's a process, all this stuff. And then they just go, oh, cool, that's it, sack him, move on. For me, like, I think I enjoy watching Chelsea the most when I have affinities with the managers. Mm. For example, I loved Antonio Conte. Just the passion on the touchline, I think, was a big thing for me, because I won't hide it. I am a passion merchant. That's kind of one of my things.
I've seen the rants, mate. I've seen the rants.
Not my proudest moments, though. But, you know, I am a bit of a passion merchant. Obviously, Mourinho, when he came into the club, just the sparkle and the charisma and the persona when he first arrived, you know, that like he is one of the reasons I started coaching. Like, I just love, no matter who, I know he's at Tottenham now and people might think they call him Judas or sort of stuff. I look at Mourinho and I just love him. I can't hate him. And obviously Frank Lampard, I kind of had an affinity because of who it was. And I think I even though the football was very erratic and there'd be times you look at it going, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? I think it's because it was Lampard that there was a certain element of you just felt more engaged.
Yeah.
And there was a period, to be honest, like where Sarri was in charge, I just didn't enjoy watching the football. I thought it was just very much you go from A to Timbuktu to Sydney, then you go back to Italy, then you go over to France, and then you actually get it across the other side of the pitch. And then by that point, obviously, they've already set up their deck chairs and the defensive team. So it'd be like you're looking at it going, okay, well, you know, this is crap. But you can see that Chelsea apparently were looking at obviously moving away from just different defensive football to, you know, being more entertaining. And Sarri proven he could do that with Napoli. So I thought, okay, well, you know, we'll just see what happens with it. Obviously, he left, went back to Italy. Then Lampard came in. But then I think at the first point under Tuchel, I was feeling a bit flat. Like there has been a period over the past couple of years where my love hasn't wavered, but I'd be kind of there going like, just watching it for the sake of it almost, because it was just part of my routine. And then at the first bit of Tuchel, that's kind of how it felt. I was bored watching it. I could multitask. I could literally go out into the other room and come back. You know, that's the sort of stuff that I do if I'm whacking on, you know, I whack on a test match for the cricket or I watch a whack on the Formula One. It's just on. You know, and then I can go in and out. That's what it felt like I was doing under the first few games under Tuchel. But to be fair to you, you know, when he first arrived, he was saying all the right things, and he's obviously a very good coach. So I was just sitting there with my dad, both are sort of going like, look, you can't really have an affinity to a manager anymore at Chelsea. Like, irrespective, they're going to say it's a project. What it will be is it'll be one vision, but with 82 million managers. So, you know, you just got to just deal with it and go with it. But the thing for me, the Liverpool game when we beat them, that's where it clicked. You could see the football was starting to come together. You could see that there was actually passage of play. It was never going to happen overnight when Tuchel first arrived. But I think the differences between him and Lampard are very apparent, because Lampard was such a novice. You know, the game management wasn't quite there. And, you know, he obviously slowly developed it and pushed on and... but you know, you got a guy in Tuchel who I think many people undervalue and underrated him because he was at PSG. You know, what he did at Mainz, what he did at Dortmund, you know, it's no mean feat. And then with PSG, he got them, even though it might have an asterisk next to it because of the situation, he got them to a Champions League final where guys like Carlo Ancelotti couldn't do it. So I think, you know, there's no mean feat there. And obviously we've now got a coach who's very, very German, I think, is just the way to do it. You know, it's Vorsprung durch Technik, a lot of efficiency. But I think that, you know, I think that slowly it's coming together. Again, I like him. I think he's great. I'm not put, and people might think, why, like, you say that, but you're not having an affinity. It sounds like you're not convinced. I'm convinced. I think he's great. But I just don't want to get close, because I know, well, given his history as well, he likes to have a row with the board. So if he has a row, he'll be gone and then we'll be back to square one. So it's like, I don't want to get close to somebody for it to then completely just fall apart again, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's basically like, I've never had a long-term girlfriend, but that's what it's like with, you know, football managers. You know, they're my exes now. So I'm there like, okay, I can't get close. I don't want to get hurt ever again. But it's kind of what it's like with me at Chelsea now.
Done, and on to the next one. Let's put those coaching skills to the test then. If Mr. Benevente was the manager right now, what positions or areas would you say need to be improved the most in the current Chelsea lineup?
I would personally say the spine. I think if we're sticking with a three back, I think I'd like to see a long term option come in at centre back. I'd like to see a centre forward who can score. Another long-term option. Might not be completely long-term. There's literally only two players I want up front. It would either be Lukaku, which I think we could get because Inter Milan are broke. So we might be able to get them at a cut price, and then he can just come into the club and obviously finish what he started, which I think as a player, he's someone who, when he has a chip on his shoulder and has a point to prove, he does it, which I think is superb. Or the obvious one being Haaland, who's just he's just a machine. He's not from this planet. Like his face doesn't look right. When he was younger, his face fitted, but now he's got older, his forehead just got bigger and his chin's got bigger. Like he's an alien. He's definitely from Mars. But him or Lukaku, and defensive. I want a number six. I want a defensive midfielder, and I only want Declan Rice. That's the only player I want because I'm a passion merchant, because he's a Chelsea fan, and he just happens to also be very, very good. So, I think Declan Rice would be the option. Centre back, it's difficult to say because there aren't very many solid long-term options available in world football now. Like there was such an abundance in the noughties of players and centre-backs that you'd look at and go, yeah, he's good, he's good, he's good, he's going to have him. Now you look at it, it's like, it's very difficult to find the perfect centre-back. Mm-hmm. And it probably doesn't help that I've been spoilt growing up with, Ricardo Carvalho, John Terry, Alex, even though he wasn't the best, I thought Alex was solid as well. Gary Cahill, we've had amazing options. So I've been very spoiled, but I definitely would like to see maybe not as long term, but obviously centre-backs do last a little bit longer. Maybe someone who's like 27, 28, just to come into the side and just hold it down for at least 5-6 years maybe. And then obviously have the team grow around them. And then having that solid spine is so important to a football team. Other bits are interchangeable, but I mean, you look at Chelsea. Over the past 20 years, the reason we've been so successful is because we had that spine. You had Cech, Terry, you had Ashley Cole, obviously, Ricardo Carvalho for a long time, but, Cech, Terry, Ashley Cole, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba. You had that. The team, I mean, Steve Sidwell did an interview about a few months ago, didn't he? Where he basically said when Avram Grant was a manager, they ran the team. They just did it themselves. And, the fact that you had players like that, I mean, it's very difficult for that to ever happen again. I mean, you look at Manchester United, it took them a while to... They had that spine once, and they've had it a few times over 20 years. But no, not even over 20 years, over since Matt Busby, really, they had that his first spine, they had his last spine, they had Fergie, and then Fergie's two spines. Like in the space of like 50, 60 years, they've had like four solid centre-back, or four solid spines. Chelsea, I think, it's very, because of the way the players are built now, I don't think you're ever going to get that caliber of mentality again. Because players are wrapped in cotton wool now, to be honest. My generation, I mentally feel a lot older than I am. Because I look at people my age sometimes and I just look at some of the stuff that they come out with or some of the, it's just anything, Twitter, whatever it is. You look at my generation and it's just like, it makes my brain hurt. Like I'm actually worried for the planet now because I'm there going, what are we going to do? Because there's going to be someone who is in this generation who we're running countries. Like that's scary. Like, I don't like that. But I think, it's like you have to get a very strong spine with a very strong mentality. But where those players are, I have no idea.
Well, we'll find out. I think the idea of Rice coming back is obviously very romantic. Although it seemed like that was almost quite heavily reliant on Lampard. Like he wanted him so much. We'll see. I look forward to seeing where Rice goes and Haaland as well. That's just, the bloke's an absolute joke. I can't wait to see how that evolves. I want to know when and why you started doing fan channel content, because it's evolved so quickly. I think it's become quite commercial quite quickly in this day and age, and it's almost abnormal for a club to not have various fan channels being created around the stadium.
Well, I mean, I did my first fan cam when I was 17. I've been 16. 16 or 17, after Chelsea beat Tottenham in the Carabao Cup final. There was just walking down Wembley Way, and there's this bloke with a massive afro Eunice, you know, he was just there. And he goes, oh, do you want to talk? Do you want to do a fan cam? And at this point, I was like, you know, I mean, I think it's fair to say I do like being in front of camera and I do like being the centre of attention. And you know, that's just my thing. So I was like, yeah, all right, let's go do it. And I did it and I really enjoyed it. I had the chat and I walked about 200 yards. And then I just kind of had an epiphany. I was like, oh, that was quite good. Like, this might be something very interesting to do. So it was like, oh, I just went, oh, do you guys need any help? Like just doing it more and more. And they're like, oh yeah, that'd be really cool. Like, yeah, let's just get you more involved. So then, yeah, like I just started doing more and more fan cams every single week. And then at the end of the season, I was kind of brought into the studio and all that sort of stuff. 100% Chelsea was part of Ball Street at that time. So I kind of went into there. And it just kind of evolved from there. And it just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And yeah, I just fell into it. I feel there's a lot of people now that are doing it because they wanted to be famous and because they want, you know, they just want to do a fan channel because that's the thing. I strongly advise that if that's how people are approaching it, it won't work. I think I'm very lucky because I kind of just, it was very much just, I became mates with Eunice. I became mates with Dan. And it's like, it just worked. You know, it just kind of grew, but we weren't doing it because we wanted to have a fan channel. Like Eunice had been approached to sort of run it by somebody else. And then he took it and ran it. And then when he left, I was kind of like the last man standing. So it was kind of just a case of, Louis, do you want to run it? So I'm like 18 running a fan channel. And it was at that point, one of the biggest on the internet, which is, I still can't believe they trust an 18-year-old. It was basically like, look, here's the keys, lock up when you're done. So like, okay. So obviously it was a lot of pressure. And I was doing that alongside my studies and stuff. And then, yeah, I think the commercialization part of it, I understand why it's there. But I do feel in some cases it's very Animal Farm now. You know, fan channels, I feel, were set up to actually represent people. Whenever someone said, oh, Louis here to represent Chelsea, I'd be like, well, I don't represent everybody. Like, I know there are people that think fan channels are, if we're going to name names, very much AFTV's bracket, which is, you know, it's just a load of people that are yelling. Some that like, well, all the fans come on actually supporting the club, but then others, for example, which are very much like, it's AFTV, I've got to get on here. Whenever I did fan cams, I never uploaded people who I felt were doing it for the sake of clicks. You know, I never wanted to do that because I actually wanted to have engaging conversations. And if people didn't agree with it, I'd say, oh, fine, that's cool. I completely understand why you think fan channels are a certain caliber, because there is a certain level of stigma attached to them because of what they are. But you know, for me, I went into it going, I purely want to have conversations about the football. And I tell you what, if you're good and you talk and you can have those conversations, you'll be absolutely fine. But now, obviously, as fan channels have grown, you know, they have just become media companies. It was always bound to happen. But, you know, when people are saying, you know, we're the voice of the fans and all this sort of stuff, I'm sitting there going, but we're not anymore. You know, if you're a massive media company, it's not the voice of fans. You know, it's for me, a fan channel has to be very grassroots. It has to be very almost not under the radar, but you can be known. It's good that, you know, companies like Sky and BT get fans involved and get fan media involved. Yeah. But I feel that there does need to be a certain element to it where you need to be on a grassroots level. You need to be boots on the ground. Because if you're not, you just don't get the same vibe off of people. And obviously, it's very difficult now with COVID and stuff. But, you know, being able to be on social media and have those conversations is great. But then at the same time, when you're doing that, you've then got the market becoming very saturated with everybody just, you know, going, oh, we're in lockdown. Let's start a StreamYard and just do it. And look, I'm not, excuse me, French, I'm not shitting on those people. You know, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, well, you shouldn't be doing it. I'm not trying to sound snobby. But it's kind of like I said, it's like there are people which are doing it to just be famous. You know, at the end of the day, however you want to do it, it's your prerogative. You do what you want. But there's like, you go on social media now, to be honest, I tweet and I put my phone down. Like if I actually engage in a conversation with somebody, you know, it's kind of one of those where it's like, cool, like we're actually, I can actually feel, I can talk to you. It revolves into, right, just drop me a DM, just talk to me there. Mm-hmm. You know, I sit, you put out a conversation and it's like just people sending for you and saying crap and just like, it's just all, I'm an old man in comparison to a lot of my mates because I look at it and they put something on Twitter and they go off and vent and they start having an argument with somebody and I'm sat there going, just looking at my phone, I'm just going, oh, fuck this, just put the phone down, that's it. I just can't be bothered, man. Like, it's, there's some stuff where it's like, I feel, yeah, fan media, it has Animal Farmed on itself. So when they turn around saying, you know, we're the voice of the fans and all this sort of stuff, and it's not really grassroots and it's now just evolving into media giants and media companies, that's not, even though it's a fan channel and people speak of fans of the club, it's a media company. I think the best people to have actually kind of, even though they've grown, but they've kept that sort of mentality and that strength within them, I think the Redmen TV is the best at doing that. And I've talked Norwich City, Jack and Chris as well, like despite having like amazing connections with the club, they still have maintained that fan mentality of, this is what we are. We're not going to try and be something we're not and grow and develop and, you know, get all snazzy with how we do our stuff. And, you know, I feel that there are other companies which haven't done that. And I've seen the growth of them turn into something which they said they'd never be. And I think that, yeah, for me, it's kind of one of the reasons I walked away from 100% Chelsea, just purely because I was in those offices with those people. And it's like, it was toxic, you know, it wasn't, let's make good content and try and engage with audiences and talk about football in a smart and intelligent way. It's right. What are your views this month? What's the numbers this? What's the numbers that? What's the number? And it literally just became a business. And I'm sat there going, well, I understand that that's the case, but you still need to have that sense of fan media, that sense of conversation. The kickoff, I think, again, is another great example of balance. You know, it's fantastic production value, fantastic conversations. And it's people that have obviously grown within the industry to become journalists almost, but they still have that sense of, we are fans of football. It's not the traditional NCTJ route. It's the very much that this is where we came from. It's a new breed, but this is what we want to do. But, you know, in other companies, it was very much numbers. And I'd be sitting there in meetings just going, do you know what? Like, this ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. Because there'd be meetings, there'd be politics. It'd be toxic. It made me toxic, a very toxic person for a little while, until I literally had to walk away and take a year away from YouTube. I was literally doing Imperial Wolf. That's it. But I think fan media, it's changing and it's growing. But I feel that I'm not sure about it anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's certain ways that I want to do things, how I want to do the Chelsea Echo and how I want to do my personal thing. But I don't know. It's good that it's growing. It's good that it's saturated. I think it's fantastic. But I very much look at it now and I think of that scene in Anchorman 2 when all the news companies are fighting each other. It's literally what it is now. And I sit there, it's like, you know, the inside of it's the inside of the industry is very much like, I feel. You think it's very glamorous, but it's very much Les Grossman and Tropic Thunder. That's pretty much what it was like working in certain my areas. But it's one of those where I think it's great to see so many people doing it. It's just, it's great and fantastic to see there are a lot of young content creators which are coming through. Like guys, I see, look at Chelsea, I look at the, you know, the Chelsea Social, I think they're fantastic. You know, Elizabeth Helenek, I think that, you know, Jay McIntosh is a fantastic guy as well. Obviously Dan's come back as well. You know, there's some really, really good people coming through. This is what I mean. Do you see what I mean by saying, I mean, I sound old. Like I've been doing this for half a decade?
It's like Harry Redknapp.
Mate, you know, I've been doing it for 6 years, but it made me go grey. I'm a silver fox on the side now. You can't see it because I get it cut, but it's like, you know, I think it's good to see such a growth within the industry, but at the same time, there's almost an oversaturation to it. Mm-hmm. But it's good to see there are people that are actually doing fan media for the right reasons. But yeah, did I even answer your question then? I just went off on one.
I think you answered my next five questions. but no, on that note, I'm 100% Chelsea. It seemed to like vanish off the face of the earth looking at the socials really quickly. But you're right, there is a very fine line with fan channels, I think, between representing the fans. I don't think you really can represent fans. No. I don't really think that's how it works, because every fan has different opinions. But you can always tell which channels run a journalistic approach, let's call it, and which run a clickbait approach. Like people aren't not even trying to get good 10-minute videos anymore. They're trying to get good 5-second clips that then end up on the socials, like just one-line bangers. But I feel like we could quite easily get sucked into that negative part. But I want to know what the best thing was about being part of, like you said, one of the biggest fan channels, especially Chelsea fan channels, especially at the time in 100% Chelsea. What were the positives?
I think it was, I enjoyed the boots on the ground. I enjoyed speaking to people. For me, that was a big positive. There's the obvious things where it's like, oh, you know, you get to go on Sky Sports, you get to this, you get to that. And I was very fortunate to go to Azerbaijan because of 100% Chelsea. And it's like, you know, there's all those obvious things. But for me, I'm a man of simple pleasures. Sometimes it might be expensive simple pleasures, but, you know, I liked the... You know, going into ground, feeling people could talk to you, actually engaging in a good conversation about Chelsea. Unfortunately, obviously, at the end, I think that for me, the whole thing just has become tainted. It's fortunate because I learned a lot from it. And I think hindsight, you know, I was there thinking I'll be there for it for years. This will be my thing. I'll grow, develop. Da 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 da. I never owned it. It was never mine, which is a common misconception. Everyone seems to think I was in charge of all this sort of stuff. Like, I ran it, you know, I was the head of, but it was never my thing. So, you know, I thought when it was there, obviously we built a good community, we built a good group of people, but at the end, unfortunately, we're getting sucked into the negatives. It was very much sort of like a... there was the wrong mentalities, and you know, I'd go into a meeting and I'd say, look, I want to go for the more journalistic approach. I don't want to, because the people would be with, you know, it'd be running from it was very red top sort of sensationalist conversations, and I'd be like, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to actually have those conversations because now we have the platform, and it wasn't purposefully having those sensationalist conversations. I wasn't there, like, people often thought I was just doing it on purpose. And then when I said, now we have the platform. It wasn't a case of I was saying certain things to get to a certain point. It just naturally progressed, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think also because the channel was being run by me at 18 and being run by me at 21, 22, you had... I think the channel, I kind of was in my whole growing up process while I was trying to run something in a sustainable way and keep its image, which I think it just came to the loggerheads. Mm-hmm. And I'd be sitting there going, I wanted to go more kickoff. I wanted to go more high quality production. But I'd be sat there and the guy who runs it, he'd be like, oh, production quality don't matter. You know, just get the videos out. I'm like, okay, right. Well, if that's the case, it's not going to work. So I was kind of there a bit like, look, I learned a lot from it. It was fantastic to do a lot of the things I did, meet the people I did, have the conversation. I've still got friends from 100% Chelsea. You know, guys like Jordan, I still speak to every day. He helps me with the Chelsea. He helps me with Imperial Wolf. Cameron is another guy, which, you know, we don't speak as much, but he's still a very good friend of mine. Also, there's people at Chelsea, which I became very good friends with. But yeah, it's like for me, I stepped away. In some cases at the right time, in some cases at the wrong time. But yeah, my mental health... It just wasn't sustainable at all.
Do you think that was mainly because of like the ins and outs of the channel and the platform, or do you think part of that was like putting yourself out there, because like football fans can be ruthless, right?
Oh, it wasn't that. I didn't give a shit about that, because I think I so, yeah, sorry, excuse me, French. That's really very matter of fact about it. I didn't care about that because I thought I'd built a very good reputation, because whenever I talk about football, I wouldn't go on to, you know, an opposition fan channel and then just start being really tribal. Mm-hmm. You don't get anywhere doing that. I'd rather sit down and go, okay, like, this is the conversation we're having. I think this person's good. I think this person's bad. But at the same time, it'd be very balanced. For me, it was the politics. Like I said, I was mentioning it. You know, the politics of football YouTube, and, you know, there was a lot of it where it's just big, obviously, like, it's become very, you know, Billy Big Bollocks media sort of thing. And I'll be sitting there going, like, lads, like, we all come from the same place. Like, let's not mess about here. But it was just, yeah, it's like, it was, unfortunately, what it was part of was very poorly run. And then, unfortunately, I would be the one taking the brunt of it from everybody else who was involved, because I was the one to be going into the meetings. I was the one to be having the conversations, trying to fix it and make sure that we got our fair rep. And unfortunately, it's just never the case. And obviously, it imploded. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'm not saying it's not part of it's not my fault. I think, yeah, I definitely did things wrong. But like I said, you know, I was looking at it in hindsight. I'm going, do you know what? Like, I was 19, 20, 21, doing a degree at the same time. So I was basically doing a full-time job and a full-time degree. Mm. And it took it out of me. I burnt out. Mentally, there was one point where it went very dark. Mm-hmm. And obviously the people that I thought were my friends didn't support me. I was kind of just left out to dry. So it was very difficult. But, you know, now I've moved on, and like I said, it was a very important part of my life, and I think it was cool to do it. Coming away and not hitting rock bottom, far from hitting rock bottom, but coming away and just being able to sort of just look rather than be in amongst it. Because if you're in it, you don't get to see it. When you're out of it a bit and you can just watch, you can see where things went wrong, what I could do differently, what the situations are. And I just took the time just to look at it and go, do you know what? I'm going to go to Chelsea and I'm going to enjoy myself. You know, guys, big props to, you know, George Benson, Yannick, Eunice, Nini, all these guys, which are literally gone, you need to come back, you need to do stuff. Dan, obviously, as well, just like, come do content. It's important to have someone like you about and just have those conversations and just develop a good pool of people where we're all kind of in the same vision, but we're all on our independent paths, but we can all support each other, I think is fantastic. And credit, honestly, biggest credit has to go to George, because he pretty much kicked me dragging and screaming when I was at my lowest point. Like, I didn't want to do anything. Like, after 100% Chelsea ended, obviously there was a lot of drama, which was completely out of my control. And I don't think it has had a long-term impact, but, you know, it had an impact on the image and the product I tried to create, and sort of how I put myself forward to the world as I was something, and then I was being created as something which I'm not.
How do you think you were being sort of portrayed?
Oh, I was portrayed as the bad guy who did everything wrong, and it was all my fault all the time. You know, there was a lot of things to do with financial situations which were completely out of my control, and I'd explained that to those people several times. And it didn't help that if they didn't fulfill a contractual obligation, I was too nice. And I went, do you know what? If you do this bit for me and fill this contract with me personally, because when the company says, don't pay them, they're not worth it. And then, you know, you go, okay, well, I disagree with that. But if that's how we're going to do it, I can't control that. It's your thing. I have to go with it. I then go back and say, right, you know, I'll try and help you as much as I can. And then they've then again failed to fulfill something. And then I'm painted as the bad guy again. It's like I got painted as this evil, conniving, toxic, you know, just, yeah, it wasn't nice. And it did have an impact. And I'm still trying to pick up the piece from that. Mentally, I've, you know, from that year, I do have, I've been diagnosed with anxiety and depression, not severe, thankfully. You know, there are people which are in a much worse place than me. But just from that, you know, at the end of 100% Chelsea, when all the stuff was happening and I felt like I couldn't do anything and I wanted to help them and I wanted to do things, you know, I was having panic attacks, you know, I was, you know, PTSD, like it was bad, really bad. And it's when I, yeah, it kind of showed me, I thought I was a good judge of character at that point. Because I mean, growing up, I never really had many friends. I was very much an outcast, which I think, you know, do it in the sector that I am now, I think that's a very good thing because it means that, you know, I can create my own thing and I can, you know, I want to build a community where people can feel that they can come together. But yeah, I thought I was a very good judge of character. Turned out I wasn't. but now, you know, I mean, people might disagree with it. They might see it, they might disagree and say, whatever, it's like, cool, whatever. They won't have a conversation about it. You know, I've often made it clear that I want to fix things. I want to, even if we can't be friends, I just want to sit there and be like, look, this is what it was. Let's actually be a grown up and have the conversations. But yeah, it's like, I think that it definitely made me. It definitely made me. As much as we're saying it's a, like I said, I want to look at it and look at all the positives. And there are some, like I said, there are some fantastic things that I had the pleasure of doing. But I unfortunately don't look at my time at 100% Chelsea as positively as I could. It'll change. It will change. Mm-hmm. Just I'll be in a decade. I'll probably look back and go, do you know what? This bit at the end, which I do think now was pointless. It was futile. But I can look back and I do look at, there are some fantastic memories I have with those people, with the friends I've made in the industry as well. And there are still people which I look up to so much and I see about, and it's just great to see them doing so well. Because we all grew together. And it's fantastic to see people growing and getting their just desserts. My aim now is just to, in my life, I just want to be happy. You know, I want to have my friends around me, you know, my family, and just people. I'm still ambitious, but you know, I don't just want to look at the numbers, because that's where it all went wrong. I want to make good things, and if the numbers come, which hopefully they do, you know, if they don't, I've had that part of my life. I have to move on. But you know, I want to make good videos and good content, create a good community online where people can feel that they can have a good conversation and not just fall into futile, stupid arguments on the internet and just literally sit there and go, well, let's dissect things and talk about it properly. And look, you know, like I said, it was a very important part of my life, very important people, very important lessons learned. Now I just need to look forward and just sort of go, cool, I've done it. Fantastic. I didn't hit my target. I don't have the silver play button. That was one thing which for me is always going to be a black mark. But I've got other projects now which I look at and go, do you know what? We're going to get them there instead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's as much as I don't care about the numbers and the silver play button and all that sort of stuff. The silver play button, it is nice to hold something there and go, I've done this.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Let's kind of literally sit there and go, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, I just want to enjoy what I'm making and just, you know, I want to be the control. I want to be the master of my own destiny. I put too much trust in people to help to get us there, and it just didn't work. So now it's a case of, look, I own what I make. This is mine. And people can come on the journey and they can take a chunk of it. And like they had, you know, ideally for me, Imperial Wharf, Chelsea Echo, we bring it, for example, writers and creators, we bring people in, and look, because they're so small, I can't offer anyone anything, and they're helping build it. And I really appreciate that. But it's a case of, look, if you want to move on, I just want you to feel that you've achieved something. You know, I want you to feel that you can look at it and go, this is what I've done here, and we can move on. And that's already happened with a couple of people at Imperial Wharf. We've got Joe Lee, he started with us. He was actually a player at first, and he just wasn't getting in the team. So I said, look, can I do some media stuff? He's now moved on. He's now working with Seconds Out Boxing as a presenter, as a producer, absolutely smashing it there. One of my best friends, Jody, we were at uni together. She came to Wharf. She was doing stuff. She then worked with loads of different clients. She's now working with BT, you know, big media companies, sorting out all their media stuff as well. So I'm very proud to be able to you know, help people get a foot on the ladder and then move on. And that's something which, you know, I want to be able to do while I can't offer someone anything. But at some point, it would be nice to hold on to some people and be like, right, well, actually, I can offer you something and we can actually build something together. And even if it does become a conglomerate company, which I've kind of said I didn't want to become, we maintain a certain path and a certain mentality, which means that we do represent a certain sector of people. And I don't want to say represent, because like I said, you can't represent everyone, but you have a good conversation, good journalistic approach, I'd say, and just good practices to build something. And it's going to take longer, no doubt about that, but I'd rather build something great to last 100 years than something good and is quick to build that will last you 25 years, you know?
Yeah.
Every single business I look at, because I was in that very dark place, and I'm not there anymore, but I'll be straight up. Suicide did cross my mind a couple of times, has done in the past. And hopefully, touch wood, you know, I never go back there, and I just got to keep controlling my demons. But it's a case of, I look at stuff as, right, if I build something, are there the people there? Where if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, we'll continue it and make it good and continue to look at what we're doing. And I'm very proud that everything I'm doing now, I have those people there. Mm-hmm. And there are people which they might move on. Grand, you know, in some cases, I really hope they do, because they're very, very good and they don't deserve to be down here. They deserve to be up there. Wait, hang on. That sounds, based on what I just said, that sounds... when I say that, they deserve to be at the very top of the game rather than like back down, sort of just in the middle, just there. Mm-hmm. You know, I I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by really, really, really good people. Mm-hmm. And we're building something awesome together with whatever it is. And yeah, you know what? It's not 100% Chelsea. It's not top of the game anymore. But do you know what? I am happy and I'm happier and I feel stronger in myself. And I'd love to get back up there. But I know if I do get back up there, mentally, I'm going to be a hell of a lot more stable. Mm-hmm. A hell of a lot more stable. And I think that's the most important thing, because I'll be so focused on it.
Yeah, I think it goes to show how important it is about having the right people around you. Like, you're a product of your surroundings, product of your environment in everything you do, and you can only be as passionate and as joyful and as committed as the people around you. And if you don't share the same visions as people, I guess that's something that maybe the school system could help us with a little bit more. Once you get into like a friendship group at school, or when you're a bit younger, it is quite hard to step back and sort of take these things in.
Well, it's ironic,
appreciate them for what they are.
Yeah, well, it's the school system that actually tried to stop me doing YouTube. And actually, again, it's another thing where I said I was mentally recovering from obviously what happened to me over the past couple of years. I was still mentally recovering from what happened to me at school. Because the school system, you know, I don't say I'm fortunate for it, but I was privately educated. And I don't think the private school system helps anybody. I think it just fills people with insecurities and builds it to a certain image, and you have to do a certain thing. And the school just ruined everything. They tried to ruin me and my dad. Are very, very close. Like, it's for the reasons we get into later. We're very, very close. And they tried to drive a wedge between me and my dad, and try to ruin my, they ruined my self-confidence, and everything they could, because I didn't fit their image of, you have to wear a suit and tie and go work in the city. But they still like to turn around at the minute and try and take credit for stuff that I've done, which is funny, because, you know, private school system is very much, oh, we make these great people. These people are so great. Oh, look what they're doing now. It's all part of us. It's not, they don't give a fuck. Again, very passionate about this. The private school system does not give a flying fuck about any single kid in their care. All they care about is getting the money from the parents and getting the number. And the kids are just numbers. It might be the same in other schools as well. But for me, look, I've already decided when I have kids, I would not put them through private education, purely down to the fact that the kids that are there, most of them are monsters. And most kids are not monsters normally, but these are the sort of kids where you turn up in a football shirt at school, be like, why are you not wearing Abercrombie? Why are you not wearing Hollister? Oh my God, you don't do this. Oh my God, you don't do that. The elitism. Christ. I just want, yeah. I think realistically, like, you are a product of your surroundings. And my surroundings were very fortunate to be with my dad and with my friends outside of school. You know, I go play football with kids from anywhere at school. I'd go, my godmother used to live on a council estate and I'd spend my weekends there if I wasn't in London with my dad doing other things. And I'd play football with anybody. I think, you know, it's the beauty that I think, yeah, private education and the school system, well, private school systems are just pointless. It's completely redundant. It's just money-making schemes. But, you know, I've already said, you know, if I had my kids, I think it's important that you have the right surroundings socially. And even if it's a case of socially at school, I think you should be surrounded by loads of different types of people because it gives you a more rounded view of life.
Yeah.
Rather than where I was unfortunate to be, which was just surrounded, quite frankly, by arseholes. There are a few nice people to have come out, but you know, it's the school system, it could do a lot more. But look, I think just the school systems in general, in terms of sociability and just general life and what it can do for you, is completely outdated. But it's a very important stage of people's lives. Definitely. Mm. I definitely agree with you.
But I think it's a credit to yourself for sort of breaking that mold that was sort of set there for you to enter. But I'd like to, before we talk about Imperial Wolf and the sort of passions that you're working on now, like we've been doing, I try to talk about the adversity that people face. I wanted to talk about your mother, because I know on your 18th birthday, in what was called the Beneventi Derby, you raised money for a cancer charity, which is something close to home for you. Would you be willing to talk about why that is something so important to you?
Yeah. So this is actually the first time I've actually spoken about it openly on a podcast. So when I was two, my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it kept coming and going. But unfortunately, when I was six, she did pass away. And obviously for a six-year-old, like it's a very, I honestly remember going to the hospital to see my mum. I still remember that. I don't remember the day at all. I just kind of blocked it out. But I remember the hospital she was at was called the Royal Marsden. Now the Royal Marsden is, it's a hospital which honestly, they have been and they still are, because I do pop in when I can. Obviously, unfortunately, I haven't been able to because of COVID. They are amazing people who we raised money for on my 18th birthday now. My dad is the reason I said we're so close, is because, you know, he and my godmother were the most amazing people on the planet ever. My mum, obviously, when I said she when I first started going to school, my godmother was my carer originally, because my mum used to work in the city as a I think she was like HR or a headhunter for a company called Michael Page, and she decided to just step away from it because she wanted to come look after me. And she, to my godmother at the time, she was the childminder. She was like, thank you very much, but we'll see you very soon. Take care of yourself. You've been very important to us. My mum started having cancer again, and my godmother just came back and looked after me and my mum. And my dad, you know, just kept going. And like I can't imagine what he went through. in terms of working, trying to look after, you know, a dying wife, and not sheltering, but to a kid who didn't understand what the hell was going on, it was just life, you know, every weekend going up to London, and even after school sometimes getting on the train, going up to London and seeing your mum just attached to a drip, or just in a hospital, and you'd see all these people, it was just normal. And I still look back now, and obviously I still didn't completely understand it. But the Royal Marsden, sort of, when my mum did die, they did everything they could to help us afterwards. I had you know, therapists sort of helped me sort of understand it and get over it. I had someone at school as well look after me and stuff. But the most amazing thing that the Royal Marsden has done is they had a support group for my dad. And it wasn't just made for him. It was made of people who are all widows and widowers. And my dad went to this support group in Fulham and met my stepmom, whose husband had died about a month before my mum, of a brain tumour in the same hospital. And she had a son at that point as well, so my brother. And they brought us together, basically, as a family. And we are very lucky, because I know there are people who aren't as fortunate as me. Excuse me. Who aren't as fortunate as me, who, you know, haven't been able to have three mother figures in their life. Like, Gail just came in and she's treated me as her own son. excuse me. Wow. Oh, this is emotional. Woo! she treated me as her own son. And I've grown up being fortunate, being able to have someone like that in my life. And then from that as well, Dad's got married when I was 11 to Gail. And we've now got, as a product of that, I've now got another brother who is, you know, kind of the glue that binds all of us together. And I think, like I said, you know, like you're talking about breaking molds, I'm very proud. Sorry.
No, it's okay. We don't have to, we'll go into it as much as you want to.
I'm happy to talk about it. It's important to talk about it. It's just, yeah. I'm very proud that my family is a mutt. And it's not a pedigree. And it's not someone who you look at as the perfect family, which you see on TV and is kind of set out in life as these people are what you should be. And I'm very proud that my family is like a mutt, and we've developed and we've grown. And it's something which the Royal Marsden I can only credit for. And on my 18th birthday, it kind of... Because it was that's sort of, you know, society. And I know I've said that, you know, I'm very proud that we're a very different society. And that's what my family always were. You know, even like I said, with the private school system, my family were always outcasts, always. Whatever school that we were at, you know, I went to two after primary school. And the first one, we were just outcasts from the start. Like, no one wanted anything to do with us. And the second one, I felt it was the same, especially at the end. And, you know, that step which I could take with all of my friends, when I turned 18, we all just went, right, fuck it, let's go play some football. And we just went down to the local Ashery, booked it out. We raised £300-400 and we just played a game of football, which we're going to do it again, hopefully. Obviously me and my dad went, well, I might play, but my dad's already said that's the last game of football he'll ever play. But I'm so proud that we could raise money together for such an important cause, and a group of people which, you know, did so much. And for me, you know, my aim in life is always, anything I do is just to make my mum proud. And actually, obviously, this is the month that my mum passed away, on the 27th of April. So April is always a very hard month for me. And like we were talking about with Italy and how I feel the connections, my mum, her ashes are split between Liverpool, which is where she's from, and Italy. So both places are very, very special to me. Italy especially, because whenever I go there, she's got this... I'll send you pictures if you want to put it in. She's got this, where she's buried, her ashes are put in the same cemetery as a lot of people from my family. And she's got this amazing view of the hills in Italy, where it's just rolling, beautiful, quiet. And where she's buried, you've got the church at the bottom of the hill, and the cemetery's at the top of like a spiraling, massive hill, where the bell tower is as well. And it's because the bell tower is actually separate from the church. And you get to the cemetery, and then there's another about 100-yard walk where you can just sit by the bell tower. And for me, because I think that's also a big part of my healing process over the past couple of years, which I haven't been able to do, I haven't been able to just go in April and sit at that bell tower, which for me is a very important part of my reviewing process of the year. My year is realistically in my head. It's like they either work in the school year format, which is September, or the football season, which is like August, September, through to May or June, and then start again. And that is also always a very important part of my process, because I always want to do my mum proud with whatever I do. And I've got a fantastic support network around me. Like I said, Gail treat me as her own son. My godmother, who I haven't actually spoken to for a very long time, and I need to, because she just, again, treat me as one of her own sons. My uncles, my mum's best friend, my aunt, who I also haven't spoken to for a long time. You know, all these amazing people that have helped me grow up. And, you know, the Royal Marsden, them, and my mum, it's obviously a very important thing. And it's something which I think, you know, like you said, you go into it as much as you can. I'm happy to go into it. But I think it's important that people can try and be open about the whole process. And I think for me, I think Chris actually explained it best to me. Chris Reeve. Well, pain's like a ball. And obviously it's very big at the beginning, but it slowly gets smaller as time progresses. For me, it's got smaller as time goes on, but you know, and there's things which I've had to deal with mentally. And crossing certain boundaries. Like Gail is, I call her mum, she's my mum. And then there's people, there's times where I remember one of my friend's mums asked about it. She's like, "Oh, how's Mario? How's Gail?" I said, "Oh yeah, mum and dad are good." "Do you find it weird calling her mum?" And there's times where it's even stuff when it annoys me that people use that to get to me. I know she didn't mean to get to me, but she, you know, when I tried to explain to her, you know, it's people just don't seem to understand it. And obviously everyone's on their own individual journey. But you know, for me, I look at it and I think the whole process is, it's, you know, it's very much, I think grief isn't something which men often speak about. And obviously I've been very fortunate to be surrounded by very loving people who have just engaged me in it. And it is looked at as a weakness. My family is the thing I care about more than anything. And when I say to people, you know, people just say it it's just a stereotype. You know, it's the way I was raised. And it's not just the Italian thing of like, "Oh yeah, we're a family." You know, everyone's seen the fucking Sopranos and the Godfather. "Oh, we're a family. Oh yeah, thumbs up." I don't look at that. For me, if I have my Imperial War family, I have my Chelsea Echo family, I have my work, my friends, that is my family. That's every I care about. Even if I only met you 5 minutes ago, but you're part of that journey, you are part of my family. And I will fight for every single one of those people as much as I can, every single time, and always have done. But being my mum and my family, my immediate family, it's like, it's always used to try and get to me. That's the thing which people use, because I know it's a soft thunder, because I've grown to hold on to a bit more. But now, sort of, you know, obviously as I've got older, I think, you know, we talked about the rants, I've calmed down a lot. You know, I'm not as angry as I was. And there was obviously lots of other factors. I mentioned school. The school was a factor why I was always angry, because I never had the support I felt I should have had. You know, I've always felt like I always felt like an outcast. I've always felt like I'm somebody who, there are times where, I know it sounds so arrogant, and I don't mean for it to sound arrogant, but there's times where I feel like I haven't got the credit I deserve for things that I've done. And I've just grown over the past 18 months, 2 years, to learn that, to be frank, I don't really give a shit about what those people think about it. I care what the people who I'm working very closely with think about it. And I care what my friends and my family who have actually, the people who, because there are people who I've met along the way who I, you know, who are through YouTube that, you know, are actually now my friends. You know, the people that I care about, the people, like I said, Chris Reeve, I care about so much. Nico, who's at Wharf, he's like my big brother. But my family, my friends who have seen me develop from just the fat kid who did stupid shit, but and was really loud, but, you know, clearly had a vision and wanted to go somewhere, to someone who has actually achieved a certain amount of that. And I'm nowhere near done, but, you know, has continued to achieve and grow. And obviously they're the ones which have seen that whole process, and they're the ones I care about. You know, everything I do is to make everyone I really care about proud. Every single thing. And yeah, I might not do things which people are proud of sometimes. I do stuff I'm not proud of sometimes. Blimey, some stuff I look back at and I go, why the fuck did I do that? But, you know, for my mum and everything, it's just so important that I do everything right, because she isn't here to see it. But every single step I take, I have actually on my desk, I've got a box, I've got it here. I'll show you. It's like, it's like a little box my dad gave me actually when I went to my second school. I kept it in my pocket the whole time. It's actually a box which got a lock of my mum's hair in it. It's got like a little cherub. And then on my desk, I've also got some of her perfume and stuff like that, just to remind me that this is what I'm doing it for. And I still remember my first day at Ball Street. I have a picture of me and my mum and my grandma, which is actually the one I put on social media a lot, of the three of us. Sat there, and I put it on my desk, and I was just typing away. I was like, why have you got pictures of your family? I was like, well, nobody really has pictures of their family on their desk. I was like, oh, okay. At this point, I was just 18. I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh, yeah. Right, okay. But now I look back, it's like, I get people that they kind of want to keep, especially with YouTube. Like, my family are involved in Imperial Wolf. You know, my dad's an advisor, my mum's an advisor. My brother takes pictures, and my youngest brother is convinced he's going to play for us one day. So, you know, at some point I've got all my family involved, but it's kind of very much like I'd like to keep them separate and not sheltered, but purely because, like I said, over the past couple of years, they're seen as a weakness and an underbelly.
Yeah.
And they've been so strong throughout this entire process. The whole, like, people have asked them things and questioned them on it, and not made the stuff that isn't true. But, you know, everything I do is for my family. And one day, you know, it would be nice to have somebody I can share it with, you know, who I can do all that stuff with. Like, you know, it's a very, in my head, I've already got, you know, visions of in a few years' time when I have my own kids and being able to take them, say, right, that's your grandma, take them to the clock tower, take them to do all this stuff, and be able to do it all through stuff that I've built and I've achieved. And it's hard, you know.
Mm.
You know, there are people which, you know, are comfortable and just following, they're doing what they want to do, but, you know, it's just getting a paycheck and they're comfortable. I never wanted to be comfortable. I want to own my creations, and I want to be able to turn around and share that with my family and say, you helped me do this, and this is ours. I want to be able to turn around to my mum and dad maybe one day, like, even when they retired, and just say, look, like, there's an advisor role and I can give you payment for it, and I can do everything and just sort of look after everybody. Which is my strength, and it's also my weakness, because I'm too nice. That's a big problem. That's something I need to deal with. I'm too nice. And I need to learn to balance it. But, you know, I want to be able to do all of this all because of my mum. And even though I didn't understand it, you know, growing up, I got to speak to her about mineral and do stuff like, and it shaped me who I am. Like, whenever I remember my great uncle being buried in the same cemetery, he's literally, because it's like a wall. So you've got ashes at the top, which my mum's, she's ashes. She's half a meter, half a Liverpool, as I said. She's at the top, and then about three down and four across is my uncle, who's buried. And I still remember when he got buried, a lot of people sort of like asking what, like, you know, about my mum and all this sort of stuff, and hearing stories about my mum. And it's been really good recently where, like, as part of that journey, as my mum, I've actually been able to understand my personality a bit more, because my dad's been able to, like, speak to me and share with me some stuff about what my mum could be like. And there's some stuff which I've never understood why I'm a certain way. And then I've heard that and I've gone, right, that's where I get it from. And when my mum, sometimes there's people like Prerna, who's involved with Wolf, and she's like talking about stuff, and I for example, I don't do something right, or you know, I can do things very seat my pants sometimes, and I never understood it. It was just very much I can be very sort of just like, right, fuck it, we're doing it, like sort of just mentally just fuck someone off and just like, right, go ahead. Again, sorry for swearing, just like like I understand my mum could be very seat of the pants. I hear some of the stories about how my mum was and how loud, how talkative, how how mental she could be. And then it's kind of nice that over the past, especially last few months, because obviously with Bubbles and stuff, I'm actually part of my family, Bubble, and that sort of stuff. I'm very fortunate to live right by Richmond Park. And I've been going for walks. My dad, you know, he drives up from Kent. We used to go for a walk, have a chat every other Friday. And I've been very fortunate to be able to just have conversations with my dad where he's just been very open with me about stuff which he hadn't been in the past, and being able to understand stuff and understand my family history a bit more and understand more about me and my mum and how everything is. And it just makes everything I do every single day that little bit more special.
Yeah.
It's that little bit more, it adds to it. And I just know that when I do get to where I want to be, because it is going to happen, you know, I know I might be very, there are some cases in the past where, yes, I can very openly say I have been very difficult to work with. I can be a fucking nightmare. Again, excuse my French, but I can be a nightmare. But I know that I will, with the people that I care about and with everything. And even if it's people that I care about now, we might fall out, like I have done with people in the past, you know. They, like I said, it's still a very important part. Every single person I meet is a very important part of my life. And whether then, you know, if they stick around, brilliant, you know. I know my best friends from home, I'm going to have them until the day we all die. You know, that is what it's going to be. Wherever they are in the world, like my best friend, we can not speak for like 3-4 months, but we just pick up straight away, me and Matt, just like, that's it, just back on it.
Do you think then that going through all of those things that you have been through, has that changed or gave more reason to why you started Imperial Wolf?
Kind of. I think Imperial Wolf was something I just wanted to do for ages. Like I remember I was about 15, 16, 17. I'd be sat, you know, in my free period because, you know, I'd be sat in the end, you know, obviously like I said with school, I almost didn't give a shit, to be honest, in the end. I was just like, oh, just, no, pointless. Yeah. Like, whatever happens, happens. I treat it like shit. I was like, fuck it. I'd sit there and watch Hashtag. Mm-hmm. And I remember going, like, I always wanted to do that. But I just didn't have the infrastructure around me. And then, again, Imperial Wolf was born out of 100% Chelsea. You know, I was very fortunate to then get the infrastructure around me. And obviously, we're at university. It was a football university I went to. So I had even more infrastructure around me in terms of going, well, you can make a football club. Like, you can just go do this. And I'm going, right, okay. But Imperial Wolf for me was like kind of, I felt I'd achieved what I could achieve at 100% Chelsea. I couldn't push it anymore. Like I said, because mentally it was just too much of a strain. And I just wanted to take a step back and build that. And I'm now, Imperial Wolf for me, yeah, I think, you know, irrespective of whatever content create, I want my fans to be proud of me. You know, they might not like sometimes like the language which is being used. They might not like the way that I go about it. But at the end of the day, I'm there going, well, I, as much as I'm making you proud, I also need to make myself proud. I want to create things which are me. You know, I don't want to be the same as somebody else. Or, you know, like I can do the very serious journalism stuff and I can sit down a camera and make those points. But at some point I will make a stupid joke or I will laugh at something because that's the way I am. Mm. You know, I can't be too serious all the time. Can you imagine me presenting the 10 o'clock news? Absolutely not. But could you imagine me doing something like Russell Howard Good News? Absolutely yes. That's kind of how it is. It's like, it's kind of the middle ground.
What sort of manager is Mr. Benevente? Are you an arm round the shoulder type or ice cold Fabio Capello banning ketchup in the kitchen?
Oh, I'm definitely not a Fabio Capello. That is mental, by the way, what he did with that. That's nuts. That is, yeah. Unfortunately, in the first year of Imperial Wolf, because it was an absolute... Because the thing is, right, I always wanted to do a football club, but obviously I had the infrastructure and I had a few mates who wanted to do it with me. But it was kind of very much sort of like a... Let's just do it for a laugh and a bit of a mess around at first. But it was always... We wanted to do it seriously, but unfortunately, the mentality was there. That's when you come up against, you know, AFTV and established brands where they've got ridiculously good players. We're sat there going, right, this might be a bit more difficult. So we're literally looking at it and there'd be times where I'd have guys that are playing for us who obviously were like really good footballers. And I'm not a coach, you know, I'm that's not kind of how I am. That's why I've got like the likes of Steve and Nico there, who are probably, you know, Nico's a Muay Thai champion in Thailand. Like, I think he was like the first white guy to actually win the belt and fight in front of the king of Thailand. Yeah, like I the first year was very much like a kid's football coach. It's like, okay, guys, we're only 3-0 down. There are some positives in that, though. But inside, I was absolutely seething and wanted to sit there and go, for fuck's sake, I just do this. This year, fortunately, like, I don't look at last year as year one because of COVID and because of how unbalanced everything was, because it was a constant chopping and changing. This, for me, is year one. And we've developed. And we have a relatively solid foundation now. We've got a great core of players, great group of lads there. I can be more of myself now. I can be more of a, why are you not being doing this? Why are you being a dickhead? I can do that now because I'm now looking at going, we are one of the better teams in our division. I feel we are one of the better teams on YouTube now. We just need to go and prove it by beating a couple of established YouTube teams. And I think we will. I think we can do it. But I think, you know, we are, it's a case of now, the vibe that I want to create at Imperial Wharf. And I was actually, we had our training session last night and I was walking to the station with a couple of players and they were just asking me about it. We were talking about it. It is a family. You know, whenever you walk through a door, you're always welcome. If you walk out, as long as you've not been an arsehole to everybody, you're always welcome back. And you treat people with respect. It's positive. We build each other up and it's just bringing us all together to make sure that everything is done. And there are people which are there who, you know, fell out of love with football. And one of my missions is it's in a similar case to the Rising Ballers in some cases. For me, it's a case of cool. Like I said, in terms of people moving on, there are players who have fallen out of love with the game or didn't get picked up, who just want to play football and just enjoy themselves and learn to love it again. And that's what I want to be able to do with a lot of these players.
Yeah.
And even if they can't move on and they do end up just staying because they want to play football and they just love us, then brilliant. But there are players, for example, Ed, you know, he had the social media thing. You know, Amazon picked him up, BT picked him up, doing stuff, doing the skills where he bounced it across a pond and all that sort of stuff. Ed's a player who, you know, is far too good for us. He's far too good for us. So I'm there going, cool, let's build you back up. Let's build, for his case, for example, let's build his social media presence. So if football actually playing doesn't work out, he's actually doing things on TikTok, on social media platforms where we can turn around and I can go, right, try this, this, and this, and then we can get a brand deal and send it your way so you can be sustainable yourself. Same with other players. You know, guys, we've got Jay Jones, you know, played for Jerome Daly, Umbro athlete. You know, he played step six non-league and he's fallen out of love with the game. So he's walked away from that. And he's just playing for us. And he has been so important over the past few months because very much, like I said, you know, this is my second year of running a football club. Like, it's mental. Like, I'm 23 and I own a football club. Like, that's nuts. And it's like, he's very much been someone I can turn around and go, right, Jay, what am I doing this right? Is this something we should do better? How should we handle this? He's been so important in it. Josh Farrokhan, club captain, he's 21 going 40 in some cases. I think he is actually the youngest player in the squad and he's the club captain. He's fantastic. Max, Bilal, every single, you know, I'm naming names here, but I should, but every single person involved, Jack Devonport, bless him, as well as another guy. He might not play as often. He's got really bad knees. He might not be able to play, but he turns around to me every week and goes, right, if I'm not playing, is there anything you need me to do? Is there anything you need to do? And just, it's everyone just picks each other up and we all just drive each other forward. And it's, yes, part of it is, I mean, which mentally, what we were talking about previously, is part of that is me saying this is my vision for this club. And other parts of it as well as other people which have been brought their own elements to it. And like I said, you know, my family very proudly is not pedigree. Very proudly, we are not a pedigree family. I remember my dad saying that to me. He said, we're not a pedigree. We're not like these people. And I don't mean it, like, he didn't mean it in a bad way that we weren't like these people. He's like, just, we're different. And Imperial Wharf is the same. And that's the image it's creating. You know, we, for example, every YouTube football team, oh, let's make our YouTube football team. Oh, and by the way, we're going to put grime music behind all of our games. Oh, yeah, we've got to be really road and really street when we're talking about stuff. Da, 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 da. And I'm sat there doing comms with Benj, just taking the piss. And then we've got obviously our kit, for example, which is, you know, very retro inspired. And the music we use, we actually use real bands. We use people that are up and coming artists. For example, Bedside Manners is, you know, the thing on the back of our shirt says My People Matter, which obviously is very important to the aura which we're creating around the club. But also it's a track from them who you know, are very good friends of mine. And I've known, for example, their guitarist Ethan for nearly five. Well, before I started YouTube, I knew Ethan. And, you know, we were just talking and just doing stuff. And, you know, we use their music and we develop that. And it's alternative rather than just being the same as everybody else. Be proud to be different. That's my, I'm very proud. There are times where I'm like, why am I not getting this? Because it's not good, but it's because it doesn't fit a certain thing. Mm. I know, for example, I currently, as who I am, do not fit what major media companies want. I don't. And I know that. So that's what another is. It's like, I'm proud to be different. I'm proud to go, well, I'm creating my own thing. And then the mentality I have to have is not us against them, because the chip on the shoulder is one of the reasons I became quite toxic. It was also, it drove me, but it was also a reason that made me toxic. But it's like, you know, I'm very proud to maybe in a few years, people are, you know, we're turning around, we'll be doing stuff, and people turn around and go, oh, can we come work with you? Can we do stuff? Can we just? And I'll be like, yeah, sure, we'll work with you. But then that's when, for example, where now I'm too nice, I'm hoping I'm going to develop and I can actually be a bit more of a hard-nosed business person as well as a creative person. You know, I want to make sure that everything we create, because it's me in charge now, because I'm doing it and I've got the right people around me, we are creating the right thing. And it's, like I said, it's going to take longer, but we're very proud to be different to everybody else.
YouTube teams can get, I can get a bit of stick, I think, from the traditionalists, I guess you'd say. But yeah. Is that something that has ever concerned you? Or, I mean, you've sort of grown up with it. Have you been able to like fully embrace it?
Oh, people have always turned around to me and said, what you're doing is stupid. So I've kind of just taken it and embraced it. Already, we've had people turn around when they score a worldie against us and go, put that in your fucking video, all this sort of stuff. To which my response usually is, well, that's the point. You know, it's a football game, so you can take it and you can look really good. But, you know, it's you know, traditionalists don't like it. But again, it's like there are players, one of my players, he played in the Essex Senior League a couple of years ago. And obviously just as hashtag I got into there, people can see what happens with hashtag. So all the traditionalists are now going, oh yeah, let's get on social media, let's do this, let's do that. But they'll still rip us to shreds for doing it. He's turning around and, you know, I'm used to it. I didn't expect it as much as we have got it. But, you know, it's just been the case. So I just kind of, we kind of just take it on the chin. But the thing is, the beauty of what we're doing as well is we know, and last week we had it, we know teams want to beat us now. In our division, we are every single team's cup final. They get ringers in to try and beat us. And none of them have been able to do it yet. Not a single one. So they can get their non-league players to come in and try and tear us apart. But we still stand there. And even if we don't win, it's a draw. And the draws annoy us. We want to win every single game. But even if we get a draw, we're kind of there still going, I'm still unbeaten. Very much, unfortunately, I don't want to be like that, sort of how Arsenal were when Robert Pirès felt the need to dive to get a penalty against Portsmouth. So they are now unbeaten still. But I'm there going, turning around going, do you know what? If we're winning games at the end of the season, for me, if I've got behind me here the space for two trophies, I've made space. So I'm there going, cool, they're going to sit behind me, and then we'll have two trophies behind us, and we can push on and kick on, defend them, and even maybe even go into other divisions. The next stage for us is, once we've won these, is I want to beat, because it's something we haven't done yet, I want to beat mainstream YouTube teams and really put our mark on the territory. Because I've said it openly that right now, mathematically, people laugh when I say mathematically, we are in a Saturday division in non-league. We are unbeaten. So right now, realistically, we are the best team in Southwest London. And, you know, that's a fact, you know, mathematically. But you can't just be it mathematically. I want to be able to turn around to SC Dons in the next 2 years and go, yo, put your balls on the table. Let's have a game. And then beat them. You know, that's it for me. I want to be able to turn around and say, this is who we are. This is what we're building. You know, get on now or get on later. But if you get on later, you're not going to be as big a part. You're not going to see the whole process for what it is. SC Dons took 5 years to get to where they are. You know, this ain't going to happen overnight. Yeah. Hashtag took 5 years to get to where they are. So I know what we're building is special. So it's just a case of putting it into place now and pushing forward. But, you know, YouTube teams do get stick. But to be honest, I'm now they're going, do you know what? And all of us, we don't care. You know, we just, the thing is, we don't look at ourselves as a YouTube team. We are a football team, which happens to have a major strength in media creation and social media. Mm. You know, that's just what we are. You know, we are still a football team that turns up. If they want to see us as a YouTube team and kick seven shades of shit out of us to try and beat us, so be it. But we'll still get up and we'll turn around and go, right, we'll put three goals in your net then. Mm. Do that. Simple as that. You've just got to have, you just, unfortunately, you know where I'm saying, I can be too nice. Slowly over the past 6 months, especially, I've grown that mentality. I've grown back to certain parts of it, which there were certain parts of it, like I said, which were good, where the chip on the shoulder was bad, but there's certain parts of the chip on the shoulder which were good. So I can now turn around and go, this is what we are. This is what we're doing. Have that. You know, this is what we're going to be doing. You're going to turn around to us and do what you want. Cool. We don't care. Mm-hmm. We're developing our own thing. And we're loving it. It's brilliant.
Oh, mate, great stuff. I'm great that you're feeling so passionate about it. I'll keep an eye on the fixtures list. I'll get along to a game soon.
Definitely, man. You're always welcome.
Louis, we've touched on so much today, an awful lot of topics. I think this might actually be the longest episode I've done, maybe. There's been a lot of different pathways to this conversation. But I feel like that's a good note to round it off on. So I'd like to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it even more so. And also, I understand, I could see it wasn't easy to talk about some of the things that you spoke about. Like you said, you haven't spoken about it on podcast before. So I do really appreciate it. Thank you. I'm sure it will help other people as well listening to it that have gone through similar things.
It's the least I can do. I really appreciate it, man. It's a fantastic show. You've had some fantastic people on, and I'm glad to be able to, you know, I'm glad you felt you could bring me on. I'm glad you felt that I was, you know, good enough to bring on. And, you know, yeah, I do appreciate being able to open up about it. Yeah, even though it was difficult, you know, you have to face your demons. You can't keep running away. Mm-hmm. So you just got to keep going, really. That's life. Peaks and troughs, isn't it? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad I could. Hopefully I can help some people with it. So, yeah, I really appreciate having me on.
Great stuff. Pleasure, mate. My pleasure. And to the listener, thank you for joining me today on the Football and Feelings podcast. Head over to the socials, maybe find me on there. Just search Liam Masters on Twitter or Football and Feelings on Instagram. But now I'll see you next time. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.